Boy, the twists and turns of Major League Baseball are just incredible, which is a good segue for us because back in 1983, we had an incident in baseball, and we call it the Pine Tar Game that involved George Brett, the Hall of Famer, Billy Martin, and an incredible chain of events. Well, the book is out. It's called The Pine Tar Game. Philip Bondi wrote it. He's a wonderful sports writer for the New York Daily News, and he's with us today. Philip, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks so much for having me on.
No, I'm glad to. How'd you like that review of the Dodger thing? How do you like what's going on there?
That is, it's unusual, but it's not quite the pine tar, you know? I mean, you'd need a tantrum. I guess if they reversed it and he came storming out of the dugout, then you'd start to have something a little bit close to that.
This could have been a very good segue into you. Because I'm telling you, if you saw this, if they reversed this for Castro, he could have come running out a la George Brett. So for any baseball fan who watches baseball and knows a little bit about George Brett, the rivalry between the Kansas City Royals and the Yankees and how Billy Martin handled the game, it was an amazing moment. I'll never forget it. And it is known as the tantrum as well as the pine tar game. But set it up for us because the book is terrific and it brings back so many vivid memories of what was going on at that time.
Well, you had an enormous rivalry that people forget about, and I think even New Yorkers forget about. They're so caught up in the Red Sox thing. But the Royals-Yankees, man, that was something big back in the late 70s going into the 80s. They played each other four times in 5 years in the ALCS, and crazy, crazy things happened every time they did. And you had these great characters. You had Billy Martin and Goose Gossage and George Steinbrenner on one side. You had George Brett and Dick Houser and the owner, the very quiet owner of the Royals, which had become a sort of a model franchise, in Ewing Kaufman, who made a great contrast to Steinbrenner. So, you know, you had small market, big market thing going on. You even had Rush Limbaugh working for the Royals and Roy Cohn working for the Yankees. So you had all kinds of weird dynamics going through this thing. And then, you know, George Brett hits what appears to be a game-winning home run that then becomes a game-losing home run that then becomes a game-winning home run again.
Well, the amazing thing is it's July 24th, 1983, and again, this is a big rivalry. As Philip Bondi has told us, his book is The Pine Tar Game. But I think we have to set the stage because there's a lot of fans who don't know what the Pine Tar Game is all about and how Pine Tar had a part in this game and why this is such a huge part of baseball history.
Yeah, I mean, there was this rule that nobody's bat could have pine tar more than 18 inches above the handle. It was a rule that was kind of put into effect by a skinflint owner, Calvin Griffith, who didn't want to replace the baseballs that had been foul tipped and gotten dirty. I mean, that was really the only reason this rule was in effect. It, pine tar did not impact the distance or direction of a ball. But George Brett was a bat slob by his own admission, and he massaged his bat handle. This was his favorite bat ever. He had used it for months. It only was composed of only 7 grains, which made it very strong. Most bats are 13 or 14 grains. So he used it and used it. The pine tar got higher and higher. And when he hit the home run, Billy Martin went out there and he demanded that the umpires measure that bat. They did. They found that it was more than 18 inches. And so they disallowed this game-winning home run that Brett had hit against Goose Gossage, of all people, the best reliever in baseball at the time. And then all heck broke loose.
Tim McClellan was the umpire, and I'll never forget it. And he looks at the bat, and didn't they measure it at home plate? Because the home plate is 17 inches.
That's right. They didn't have, it's not like they had a tape measure with them. So they measured it against home plate. It was clearly more than 18 inches, and he walks over after discussing it with his fellow umpires. He says, all right, I'll do it. So he calls him out, and Brett goes at him. He gets in a headlock from Joe Brinkman, another umpire. But what's interesting is McClellan says, what was he going to do to me exactly? I'm 6'6", I have all this equipment on, and I'm the one holding the bat. So actually, it was a good thing that Brett never got at him, I think.
Boy, great story. Philip Bondi is with us, New York Daily News sports writer, columnist. And the book is The Pine Tar Game. And again, there's certain moments of baseball history that are just captured on film, and you really put it to the words on the paper. So Brett runs out like a maniac, and his eyes are bugging out and his arms are waving.
And he's cursing. That's one of the things I learned when I was writing this book was something Joe Simpson told me. He was out there. Joe is now Atlanta Braves announcer, but at the time he was the teammate trying to hold back George Brett. What he told me was that if you tell an umpire that it was a bull bleep call, you can get away with it. But if you tell an umpire it was a horse bleep call, that implies incompetence on the part, general incompetence on the part of the umpire. And George Brett was screaming both things, so he didn't really have a chance of staying in that game.
Wow, so he's thrown out, of course, and the home run is disallowed, and the Yankees go on to win the game. And then the Keystone Cops become part of this legacy. And then the story, now that's just the baseball game with all the nuttiness of the fight and running out and all that. And then the fun starts. Then what happens?
Well, Steinbrenner and Martin, and they do not want to resume this game after they've won it. I mean, he was the third out. George Brett was the third out. So the Yankees figure they've won this thing. They're in a tight pennant race. And the last thing they want to do is resume this game in the ninth inning. So they go to the courts, and they use Roy Cohn, the famous communist hunting Roy Cohn of the Joe McCarthy era. He tries to convince judges that the Yankees can't assure the safety of the fans if they resume this game, which of course is utter nonsense. And George Steinbrenner, he actually tells his staff to initiate a research project, an investigation into Lee McPhail, the American League president, who has ruled against the Yankees. So all this stuff was going on, crazy stuff. But eventually, you know, they do resume it. Billy Martin turns it into a farce by putting Ron Guidry as ace in center field. He puts Don Mattingly, who you know about, at second base. And then Billy Martin tries to outfox everybody one more time. He appeals to the new umpire crew and says that George Brett a month earlier had not touched the bases. Because he figures this is a new umpire crew and they can't possibly know. But there was a little genius named Bob Fischel in the American League office who actually foresaw this moment. And so out of the pocket of one of these new umpires, Dave Phillips, comes an affidavit from the previous crew attesting to the fact that George Brett had, in fact, touched all the bases.
Boy, maybe one of the more famous documents pulled out during a game going back to 1951 with Eddie Goodell, who was the midget who hit
right
for the St. Louis Browns against the Detroit Tigers, and the Tigers protested, and Eddie Goodell pulled a contract out of his pocket that showed that he had been signed by Bill Veeck for that day.
So, right. And guess who signed Eddie Goodell in the back of a Packard? Bob Fischel.
Really?
The same guy.
Really?
The same man. And it was Bob Fischel who had worked for these rascals like Bill Veeck and George Steinbrenner foresaw it. It's the same guy.
I never knew that. Very good. Wow. All right. So, but Lee McPhail, the son of Larry McPhail, the blustery owner of the New York Yankees with Del Webb and Dan Topping, and they forced McPhail out in after 1947 when at a victory party for the Yankees, he's drunk and basically it challenges everybody. The next day, he says, all right, I'm going to sell my shares to you guys. His son, Lee McPhail, and now his grandson, Andy McPhail, is back in baseball, of course, with the Phillies. But Lee McPhail, very quiet guy, and he felt very strongly that he was not going to let the Yankees get away with this.
Yeah, yeah. And Lee McPhail had been a Yankee general manager, so there was some thought that he might rule in favor of the Yankees. But he was a decent fellow, and he understood that this was a rule that really was very ambiguous. It was a series of rules at the time about what to do with a batted ball. There was an illegally batted ball. It wasn't clear what to do, and he basically made law. He made law by saying, in the spirit of the game, you just remove the bat. You don't call anybody out. You just remove the bat. And that became part of the rule book after that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very good. Boy, the book's, how's it doing? Very good. It's a great moment.
They love it in Kansas City.
Did you get George Brett to comment on it?
Yeah, George showed up at an event I had on a book tour in Kansas City. And to be honest with you, I was a little nervous because the book does include a whole chapter, basically, on the rocky relationship that George Brett had with his father. His father was very dismissive of George, saw him as the slacker in the family. He believed, Jack Brett believed that his son Ken was the golden boy of the family. George was the kid who would take shop instead of math, who would walk around with his shirt out of his pants, who literally needed a kick in the butt, he felt. And he felt that way right even as George Brett was hitting 390 and, you know, becoming the greatest baseball hitter of his generation. His father really never respected him. So I was a little worried that George would take offense at this, but he was very gracious. He said he loved the book, and he was very, very positive about it, which was a relief. I imagined him charging at me as he had out of the dugout.
Hey, that would be great. That's great. You know, that'd be what was the quarterback, Everett for the Rams? Remember that?
Jim Rome.
Boy, funny sport, huh? When things happen. Boy, Philip Bondi with us. The book is The Pine Tar Game. Where does one get it? Just typically on Amazon, those spots?
Well, on Amazon, but I'd love people to find it at an independent bookstore. You know, independent bookstores are having the same problems that newspapers are having these days. So, you know, if you can spend a couple extra dollars, go to your... Support your independent bookstore.
All right. The book is terrific. I've enjoyed it, and it brings back, for people who enjoy the story, The Color of Baseball, this is an incident that I just think of you say Pine Tar Game, I see him charging out of the dugout. I mean, that's the one thing I remember. But as you point out in the book, a lot happened after that. And then, of course, how does it end up?
Well, it ends up with the Royals winning that game, and with Billy Martin kind of unraveling after that. I mean, they had stolen his moment of glory. The Yankees sort of slowly fade, and Billy kind of self-destructs in many ways during that season. He gets suspended shortly thereafter for calling a different umpire a stone liar.
Right.
And I covered the team at the time. That's how old I am, and I remember the scent of alcohol growing by the day around Billy at that time.
Wow.
So it wasn't pretty what happened afterwards for the Yankees.
All right. Terrific recollection, really, of the Pine Tar Game. That's the name of the book, The Pine Tar Game. Philip Bondi, B-O-N-D-Y. All right, as long as I have you on, let's talk a little New York baseball here. You know, the Mets are going wild. They care, I was just saying, Curtis Granderson having a great season, and the Yankees lost today to Cleveland, but the Yankees are back. They retire a number every day. So
the Yankees planned these retirements before they thought they were going to have another lousy season. It was a great way of selling tickets.
Give me your take on Mets and Yankees. Go ahead.
Well, they're both extreme. They have both been extremely fortunate in their placement, their divisional placement. The Mets, in particular, because the Mets have played 500 baseball since April 23rd, and yet somehow lead the Nationals, the most underachieving team in baseball, by 5 games at the moment. So the Mets have been very fortunate, and yet they're a team that nobody wants to face in the playoffs because now they have all this great young pitching. Nobody wants to play them in a best of seven series. So they're in good shape now, largely because of where they were placed. I mean, imagine if they were in the NL Central, they'd be 7 games behind by now. So, yeah, they're in good shape. The Yankees are not that good of it. They're not that good. I still don't know how they are where they are. And they likely will end up as a wild card team, I feel, behind the Blue Jays, at which point, well, we'll wait and see. But You know, it's interesting. When I started writing the Pine Tar Game book, the Royals were on their way to their 19th straight losing season, right. And the Yankees were struggling. And it's still possible now that they could meet each other in the playoffs and even possibly in the ALCS. So that worked out.
Wow. All right. Last thought about Philip Bondi with us. I'm glad to have you on. And I always have Bill Madden on. And, you know, you guys from the news, you cover it. You really cover baseball. A-Rod. What a season this guy is having. What is his legacy from this year? How do people view this year
the eyebrows are raised. He's earned our suspicion. Let's put it that way. He's earned our suspicion. So the thing with A-Rod is the worse he does, the more we trust him. It's a weird. So he's been in a slump. And because of his slump, I think he's become more trustworthy in the last couple of weeks. But he did hit a grand slam. When he hits a grand slam, the eyebrows get raised. So, you know, he can't win at this point. But you know what? He's earned that. So, too bad.
Yeah, he sure has. But 700 home runs probably in his future, I would imagine.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how the Yankees celebrate or don't celebrate different things in his future. If he's around when he breaks Babe Ruth's record, I don't suspect a big parade for him.
No. Boy, very good. Nice talking ball with you, Philip. Thank you for being on today. And the Pine Tar Game is the name of the book, and you did a good job with it, and it's a good part of baseball history. So congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. More coming up right here at KMBR 680, the sports leader.